All right, everyone, it's the Grim Lord here, and this is Grimm's Comics Corner. Wouldn't it be boring if I didn't do new comics, right? If we only did, like, the same things you see all the time? Well, that's why I'm trying some new things. And, also, let's promote something that's going on right now. As of this video, Humble Bundle is doing an awesome Red Sonja bundle. So you're getting a lot of classic Red Sonja, like I'm reading here. And you're also getting the complete Volume 5, issue by issue. A Dynamite or an awesome company. They are a cool DRM-free comic company. They have their books in full PDF scans. And of course, we're not even saying scans. They're fully digital. Digital PDFs, and you also have CBRs and ebooks if you like that. Not with all the books, but with most of them. And you're getting a lot of books for just $18. That's the price of one trade paperback book, usually. When I went to the local comic shop a while back, we have a local comic shop. It's a little out of the way, but they have a lot of the trade paperbacks, and you know what I'm talking about. Sometimes they're hardcover. Sometimes those are like $20, and that's just for, you know, the volume one. So if you're talking about a whole bunch of volumes of books, which you are getting, you're only getting them for $18. And they're in all kinds of formats, so you should have no problem with that. Humble Bundle's really cool. And if you like manga, they're also doing a Baki bundle, which is Baki the Grappler, legendary shonen manga, so that's there too. That might not be there for much longer, but the Red Sonja bundle is going to be there for a little while. And Dynamite have worked with a lot of cool companies. They worked with Groupies, who I've actually done some bundles with. And, of course, Humble. They've supported them. I think they're on Fanatical. I think they're on a lot of different places. But they're always bringing their comics to the people. And comics may not be selling as much as the manga right now, but I am pretty loyal to comic books. I do like the original comics. I like the classic comics. I understand manga is more popular, but I'm just loyal to comics. That's what I grew up with. That's what I want to continue to read. And if you're a manga fan, you know, that's great. I've got a lot of manga, but I don't know if I'll ever get around to reading it. It's just not my big thing. I prefer the colored pages, and I know a lot of pages in manga are not colored because that's the style. That's fine. But at any rate, I want to go ahead and open up The Adventures of Red Sonja Volume 1, which I think is some of the earliest Red Sonja books. And, look at that. Classic art. It's a little rough, but that's the way it looked, you know. It didn't have all the stuff that we see now in comic books, where there's a lot of, I don't know what the word I'm looking for there is, but it's not as flashy, I guess you could say. It still has, again, that rough edge, almost like a little bit, I mean, there's some brushing here and there to where you can see the definition and the lighting in the characters, but it's still very rough. And of course, Conan's here, and, you know, we love Conan. Of course I do. Conan, he's awesome. Always have loved Conan the Barbarian books. Okay. Oh, wow. This is a never-before-reprinted material. Oh, these are the Red Sonja tales from Marvel. Excuse me. Marvel Feature presents 1-7, plus an introduction by legendary Red Sonja writer and Marvel editor-in-chief Roy Thomas. We'll definitely read from him, because we definitely want to see what he has to say here. But it says, "Know also, O Prince, that in the selfsame days that the Sumerian did stalk the Hyborian kingdoms, one of the few swords worthy the cross with his was that of Red Sonja, warrior woman out of the majestic Harkonnen, forced to flee her homeland because she spurned the advances of a king and slew him instead. She rode west across the Turanian steppes into the shadowed mists of legendary, the Nemedian Chronicles. She lived in a savage world in an uncivilized age, much like our own, a world ruled by men and governed by the sword. Not there yet. They called her Red Sonja for her flame-red hair and the smoldering fire of her pride, which gave her a sword arm, a strength that few men could match and none had ever defeated. This is a must-have collection of, well, we've already gone over that. But these tales are where it all begins and help set the stage for the current Red Sonja series from Dynamite, which we will go into, I think, if you guys like this. Remember, these are originally Marvel Comics books, and they are long out of print. Dynamite has the rights to them, and you can get them in the bundle, so enjoy that. We have 3 volumes of this, by the way, and we also have the further adventures, but we probably don't have them all. But we have quite a bit if you want to, you know, learn about the history of Red Sonja. Also, there's a movie. Yeah, some of you may have seen it, but it's actually quite good. So if you want to see the classic Red Sonja film, I highly recommend tracking that down. I'm pretty sure you can find it on Tubi or Pluto or things like that. Maybe Amazon has it, but definitely watch that one. And of course, there is a Red Sonja movie coming out, and I've looked at the actress. She looks the part. So I'm hoping that that's going to be good. Of course, there's a strike right now, and that movie's been kind of slow in development, so I have no idea what's going to happen with it now. But we have this. So there's the chapters, and 1975 to 76, way before I was born. This is old stuff, guys. This is Grandpa's comics. But Grandpa's comics are pretty good, you'll find out. Leave it to Big Red, as I often affectionately called her, to have 2 origins with 2 different spellings of her name. As many Robert E. Howard and comic book aficionados know well, the first of her pair of debuts came in the pages of the pulp magazine Magic Carpet for January of 1934. Magic Carpet was given over to stories of derring do from the days of the Arabian Nights and the Crusades, give or take a century or 3. Robert E. Howard, who created his best-known character Conan the Sumerian in 1932, and is the major founder of the school of fiction now often called Sword and Sorcery, sold several short stories of that magazine. His stories were heavy on the sword, but there was no sorcery at all. One of these tales was called The Shadow of the Vulture. And it's in shadow that you'll find Red Sonja of Rogatyn, a tall Russian warrior woman who sports a saber, a dagger, and 2 pistols. You'll also find the Terse besieging the city of Vienna in the 16th century. A German knight is principal hero named von Kalmbach, though Sonja has to rescue him a time or two. And even a twin sister of Sonja's named Sophia, who apparently was a real-life historical character. And the mistress to one of the higher-ups of the Saracens, who were the story's bad guys, of which the vulture of the title was chief. So how did I find out about her and transmogrify her into Red Sonja, she-devil with a sword? Well, by 1973, Conan the Barbarian was finally selling fairly well after a somewhat shaky start, so I felt the time was finally right to introduce a roughly equivalent female hero into the series, with an eye toward expanding the franchise, as they'd say nowadays. At that point, I didn't have a name or even a specific concept for her. Yet I knew what color I wanted her hair to be, red. The reason? Conan's life, at least in its broad outlines, had pretty well been mapped out by REH himself, posthumous collaborator L. Sprague de Camp, and a couple of Howard fans in between, and included liaisons with 2 sword-wielding lasses. Yes, that's right, not the hordes of blade-wielding hellions that seemed to pop up all over the place later, but just 2, and a life is recorded by Howard that spans several decades. One of them was Baelit, the pirate queen of the Black Coast that he'd met in the tale of that name, and with whom he sailed the seas for maybe about 3 years, but only the single story. And the other was Valeria, a blonde fellow mercenary with whom he invaded the lost city in a novella, Red Nails. Red Nails, it's good. But whom Conan wasn't fated to meet till he was well into his 30s. At least while in the comic he was still around 20. So I decided I needed a new heroine, one I could do anything with, because there were no prose stories in the Conan paperbacks that would conflict with what I might have her do. And I wanted her to be a redhead, primarily to make her different in one more visual way from Baelit and Valeria. Enter Alan Howard. While evidently of no known kinship to Robert E., pardon me, a fan named Alan Howard wrote an article called Conan on Crusade, about the adventures of Robert E. Howard's often Conan-like heroes and stories set during that general several-century period. The article had originally appeared in the fan magazine Amra, devoted to Howard and to sword and sorcery fiction, but I first encountered it in a collection called The Conan Swordbook, published by Mirage Press. By then, having become a thoroughgoing fan of Howard's fiction, I was collecting and reading everything of his I could, including many stories not yet published but sent to me by Glenn Lord, the literary agent for the REH estate, the gent with whom I had concluded the deal that had brought Conan to Marvel Comics in the first place. Alan Howard didn't really say much about Red Sonja of Rogatine in his Conan on Crusade piece. In fact, he didn't even mention her by name. He simply described her as a red-headed Russian she-cat who would have made a fit companion for Conan. In fact, she might have been a bit too much for him. These two sentences intrigued me, so I obtained a copy of Shadow from Glenn Lord, read it, and from then on, it was only a matter of time, and not too much of it at that, before she found her way into comic books. I suggested to artist Barry Smith that we adapt Shadow of the Vulture and Conan the Barbarian, and Barry agreed. Admittedly, besides being the writer of the comic, I was also its editor, so Barry might have gone along with what I wanted, even if he hadn't much cared for the idea. But I think he liked the story as much as I did, and he did a wonderful job with her, even if I was never totally sold on the idea of her wearing the Hyborian Age equivalent of what were then called hot pants, and which were a minor rage in New York, if not all over the country. Mmm, those hot pants, right? With Conan the Barbarian 23, we dumped her in the entire Shadow story into the middle of the War of the Tarim story arc we were then doing, and it worked out perfectly. The story was originally scheduled for number 22, but there was some deadline or other problems, and 22 wound up being a reprint. Albeit with Barry's powerful cover showcasing Red Sonja a month before she would grace the comic's interiors. So why Red Sonja with a J? Why not Red Sonja, even if we drop the Rogatine bit? I believe I felt that if she were to be a possibly continuing character in Conan, it might be best to make her a bit of a more of a new character by changing the spelling of her name ever so slightly. That way, Red Sonja with a Y would continue to exist pristine and untouched in the crumbling pulp pages of old magazines, and they're definitely crumbling now, and the inevitable and welcome reprints. Yes, definitely. Love the reprints. While Sonja with a J was a blank slate on which I could write and Barry could draw whatever we would. The initial comic which introduced her adapted the entire Shadow of the Vulture story in one tightly paced issue, keeping Howard's title. With Conan the Barbarian 24, however, we branched out a bit. I won't bother even try to remember at this juncture precisely which of us, Barry or myself, thought of any particular bit in the Song of Red Sonja, except that I dug up a fragment of REH verse called Tarantella, which I used as the song of the title, and decided she would have made a vow that she would never have any lover except a man who defeated her in battle. That was actually passed on to Chi-Chi in the Dragon Ball series. Remember that Chi-Chi said that she would never marry a man unless she could beat him in battle. Some feminists and a few guys, too, have taken me to task over the years for that vow. Hard to believe, right? You think that feminists would appreciate a man that could, you have to fight me in battle. I mean, I think that would be very, like a feminist kind of thing. Like, this man can beat me in battle, then he's worthy of being my husband. I guess, something like that. Because, you know, they're always about the strong, powerful woman. If this man can surpass me, then he's worthy of being my partner, right? I mean, that's kind of what I'm noticing. But that's never bothered me. The lineage of the concept was flawless, literary, and respectable. A statement attributed to the warrior queen Iofi in William Butler Yeats' beautiful early 20th century verse play on Bale's Strand, one of whose protagonists was the great legendary Irish hero Cuculain. So I never faltered then or now in support of Oath. If I didn't know the motivations of a heroine I had, at the very least co-created, then who did? Nor did it seem to bother Barrys and my fellow professionals who voted the Song of Red Sonja as the best comic story of the year 1973. Wow. After kicking Conan the Barbarian 24, we had Sonja kick Conan in the gut and ride off with the priceless tiara that he had helped her liberate from the palace of the besieged Macolette. With that issue, Barry too rode off into the sunset, so as far as the Color Conan comic was concerned, though he and I would still do our adaptation of Red Nails for the new black and white mag Savage Tales, and thus the Larry of the Red Brotherhood entered the world of comics only slightly later than Red Sonja. The readers clamored for more of Sonja, just as I figured they would, and not too many issues later they got it. Three-part story that began in the first issue of the new Conan, starring Black and White Mag, the Savage Sword of Conan, and continued in two issues of the Color Conan comic. I hasten to assure one and all this, I hasten to assure one and all that this clever segue between Max was not some clever marketing ploy on the part of Stan Lee and myself, but was done because when Savage Sword was abruptly added to Marvel's schedule, RIP Stan Lee, by the way, Marvel's schedule, there wasn't time for the new major Conan artist, John Buscema, to draw a new story for it. So we just yanked the next one from Conan the Barbarian. It's only by sheer good luck that it happened to bring back Red Sonja, which gave us a chance to have rising painter Boris Vallejo, wow, depict both Conan and Sonja on the cover of Savage Sword number 1. For that issue, I wanted to do the story that came in between her exit in CTB number 24 and her return, complete with a price of her head in Savage Sword number 1. I was fortunate in enlisting as artist there the esteemed Spanish illustrator Esteban Maroto, with inking by a combination of Maroto himself, Neil Adams, and Ernie Chan, then Ernie Chua. The result was the exquisite gem of a story in terms of visual beauty, with a plot conceived for reasons I know not, while my first wife Jean and I were attending a Ricky Nelson concert at Carnegie Hall. Hey, I figured if I'd sung on the Carnegie Hall stage 3 years later, Ozzy and Harriet's son deserved a shot as well, right? And yes, I definitely did mean to imply a homosexual relationship between the King of Pas de Chat, a name I borrowed from Frank Herbert's novel Dune, I believe, and his albino bodyguard. Okay. So we're almost done. I guess at this point I ought to say a few words about the metal bikini. I didn't coin that phrase. Our readers did, but it fits. As I said above, I hadn't liked certain two modern aspects of her original outfit. Though the male shirt was fine. As it happened, Esteban Maroto had recently sent me from Spain, unasked, a drawing of Sonja, which had her in a rather skimpy armor. An illo I printed in Savage Sword number 1, which led to Esteban's drawing a solo Sonja story in that issue. I liked the garb he gave her, as so did John Buscema. After all, Conan often ran around naked but for a loincloth, so why not Big Red? Soon afterward, I came up with a mildly twisted rationale for her wearing clothing that deliberately tempted men, when of course she'd cut off their fingers if they tried to go touchy-feely on her. Hey, she had a troubled childhood. What can I say? Yeah, I mean, you know women like that, right? Look, but don't touch. By now, Conan was such a hit that it seemed logical to put other Howard characters like King Cole and Red Sonja, insofar as she was an REH character, out in comics of their own. And so Sonja became, in 1975, only a couple years after her creation, the star of Marvel Feature. It was probably Marvel's editor-in-chief then, either Marv Wolfman or Archie Goodwin, who suggested that the artist be Frank Thorne, a longtime pro who'd done the post-apocalyptic Mighty Samson comic for Gold Key a few years earlier. I liked his work, so that was fine by me. Only once again, Marvel's inevitable scheduling brinksmanship didn't allow Frank enough lead time to do a full-length tale for Marvel Feature number 1, and anyway, I was in the throes of going through a painful second separation from my first wife. Ouch. So I asked Bruce Jones, who'd written and drawn some fine stories for science fiction comics I edited, to script the first few Red Sonja stories, except for the very first one. For that one, I quickly adapted a Robert E. Howard short story called The Temple of Abomination, which was set around 1000 AD and featured a Conan-like hero named Cormac McGart. I enlisted the talented Dick Giordano, who recently inked a John Buscema penciled Red Sonja back up in Conan and loved drawing beautiful women. As the artist, see? People love drawing beautiful women. You know, it's a thing. It's not sexist. I mean, what's wrong with drawing beautiful women? I mean, shouldn't beautiful women like that they're being drawn? I mean, as far as I know, a lot of beautiful women that get fan art of themselves are like, wow, this is really nice fan art of me. Well, you're a beautiful woman and the guy likes drawing beautiful women. And there's also beautiful women that like seeing pictures of other beautiful women drawn art and things like that. I don't think there's any problem with it. And we held the story down to a very lean 8 pages. I filled out the remainder of the issue by reprinting that Maroto Sonja story from Savage Sword number 1. First time in color, and we had our first issue of a solo Red Sonja mag. I was sorry not to be able to work with Frank Thorne right off the bat, but I love the work he and Bruce Jones did together. Bruce wrote a script in advance instead of using the Marvel method of having the artist work from a plot and then add dialogue later, and this led to some inevitable layouts by Frank, who even lettered his stories. Certain aspects of the story didn't strike me as being quite as much in the Robert E. Howard vein as I wanted, but my quibbles were minor. I liked the stories, even if I was still planning to return after a few issues. When I did with Marvel Feature Number 6, I immediately brought Sonya back more into the Marvel version of the Hyperion Age, with a story in which she encountered Caranthes, who's spelled with a C instead of a K. I've been an offstage character in Howard Conan's story, The God and the Bull. Caranthes was a priest of a Stygian god Ibis, so I even playfully referred to the latter as Ibis the Invincible, the name of an old Fawcett Comics hero who had been a backup feature in the Wiz Comics behind the original Captain Marvel. I was determined to have fun with Red Sonja, and I did. The urban legend of baby pet alligators flushed down toilets and growing up wild in the sewers of New York City led to the Gator Men of Marvel Feature Number 6, of course. And of course, she and Conan meet up in the last panel of my first issue, with the Pirate Queen Baylet tossed in for good measure. Since I was writing both mags, it was fairly easy to dovetail the Sonja stories in Marvel Feature 6-7, with two or three issues of Conan the Barbarian, even bringing in King Cole in the big finale. Unfortunately, we can't reprint that issue of Marvel's original Conan series, so you just have to take my word for it. Wow. Well, I mean, it is what it is. Red Sonja, Conan, Baylet, and Cole, for that matter, come out on top against the Stygian wizard who set them all up and even pulled Cole from an earlier era, even if Sonja is never going to be high on Baylet's hit parade. There's also a Cole the Conqueror movie, and I believe it's got Kevin Sorbo in it. Kevin Sorbo is a great guy, and I highly respect him, so check him out if you haven't seen him in Cole the Conqueror, which is actually a pretty good one, if I'm not mistaken. Of course, he was Hercules, also, of course. And after Marvel Feature Number 7, such was Sonya's popularity that she even gained her own magazine for a couple of years, graduating into Red Sonja Number 1. But that hopefully is a tale to be told in the second volume of the series, if the good Lord Ehrlich is willing and the creek don't rise. Okay, here we are. After the last rust-colored glow of sunset, no one may enter or leave the teeming city-state of Padishah. The proclamations of King Ganif are quite clear on this point. There we go. Yet the great gates swing wide this night, and an armored scarlet tressed goddess rides slowly, proudly out of the Hycranian polis. No man knows the place of her birth, nor where she learned to wield a sword to shame many a male. They know only that she is called the She-Devil of the Hycranian Steppes. That and Red Sonja, going out on another secret mission for His Majesty, are you, Red Sonja? Save your breath, Amir. It's clear she's not in a talking mood tonight. Red Sonja. By Roy Thomas, Esben Morodo, Neil Adams, and Ernie Chan, colored by Jose Velarubia. Humph. A house full of brats, and a husband to beat her once a week. That's what such a woman needs. And you're the one to supply her, Amir. Why not, pray tell? You've much to learn, Luron. Red Sonja's made a vow that no man ever shall touch her, save one who's defeated her in battle. And it begins to look as if at that rate she'll be a maiden when she dies. Perhaps the warrior maiden hears these hoarse whispers, perhaps not. Yet as she rides at measured pace past the outbuildings just beyond the city walls, she is remembering. Remembering a day, now several months gone, when she stood before King Ganif and his albino bodyguard, Trollus. You understand, then? Padishah must pretend to be honoring its commitment to help our sister state Makalet against the Turanian hordes which besiege her. But in reality, you wish me to steal back the serpent tiara which was part of your daughter's dowry. We'll have no talk of stealing. If you didn't know he was gay, I don't know what to tell you. It was a clerical era which included the tiara and the dowry when Melisandre married, whatever his name is. Bring it back, and you'll have the most precious gift it is within my kingly power to bestow. Fail me in this, then. I am Red Sonja, O Chosen of Tarim. I do not know how to fail. And so clad in shirt of silvery mail, Red Sonja had led the city's paid mercenaries westward to defend poor doomed Makalet against the armies of Yezdegerd, Crown Prince of Turan. Not for her were thoughts of the eastward tread of an empire, or of mighty forces set in motion by playful gods. She merely obeyed orders, and she fought for pay. After a decent time spent in defense of Makalet, she had tricked a northern barbarian named Conan into helping invade the city's treasure tower, where she found the coveted serpent tiara. Too late, however, she spoke the archaic words, Kanama Ka Lajarama, which would have kept it a tiara, and so it transformed at her touch into a writhing dragon thing instead. She'll never know whether the hard-pitched battle which followed was real, or whether it was a phantasm of dream which she and the savage Sumerian fought there in those gold-cluttered chambers. Yet at length, twin powers of sword and sorcery bested it, and it shrank once more into what it had been, a bejeweled tiara, which she in turn escaped with, leaving her barbarian ally sullen and betrayed in the dust. Strange, though, how in the days since then she's not forgotten the sun-bronzed, blacked mane, Conan. No, not quite. Still, some hours agone, she stood alone amid the guardsmen of King Ganif, her manner haughty, her bearing proud. I restore this tiara to you, O blessed of heaven, and claim my just reward. A reward you shall have, my dear Sonya, precisely as I have promised it to you. Now, good Trollis, guard, seize the wench, gently but firmly. You heard the king, seize her. Arlok, take your lying soul. So this is how you repay a loyal soldier. Well, you'll not take Red Sonya prisoner. Not if you send all her Kanya against me. Ha! A knee in the gut for you, dog. And replay my message to your king. We have her, blessed one. But she is truly, as they say, a she-devil. I was counting on it. A welcome change from all the spineless, spiritless wenches currently in my harem. Harem? Gods take me, I should have suspected such a trick from one who'd steal from his own flesh and blood, which you were willing enough to do for me for a soldier's rations and an unspecified reward. But, Trollis, I see you lust after the warrior wench fully as much as I do. Perhaps. Then you shall have visiting privileges with her. By and by you have my word. The word of a liar. I kept my word, woman, to the letter. I vowed to give you the most precious gift. It lay within my kingly power to bestow, and so I shall. You simply failed to comprehend that the preferred gift was myself. But I weary of feminine conversation. Take her away and have her scrubbed. I'll not have her smelling of the road when I come to her. This very evening. No warrior ever lasted long who did not know when to surrender. And so Red Sonya suddenly became quite docile. You are wise to act thus. The king would rather have you without whip welts on your back. Go croon to your fellow steers, eunuch. Women, bathe her. I beg of you, do not fight us. We do only as we are commanded, which is how I got into this mess in the first place. Still, you're right. It would do no good to send you sprawling. Still, try to treat me like a sack of Numidian potatoes, and you'll get as well as you gave. You see, warrior woman, it is not so unpleasant here in the king's seraglio? We are fed, cared for, pampered, and spoiled, like a kennel full of dogs. You would be wise to banish such thoughts from your head. Perhaps our master himself can change your mind when he lays hands upon you. He'd best be quick to count how many fingers he has left. Hopeless. Absolutely hopeless. Wontons? Lie abeds? Do you think the king will wait all night? We have done all we could here, Lucrezia. Yes, that's true enough. I'm as ready as I shall be. In here, girl, your lord and master awaits. He certainly does. Why, we've grown absolutely famished for her presence, haven't we, Trollis? Yes, Majesty. You see, Trollis, I told you that, armor or not, Red Sonya's proper place was never in the forefront of men's battles, but in a king's boudoir. And you were right as ever, Majesty. My appearance then is pleasing to you, O blessed of Tarim. 1,000 scribes scratching away from the day Lemuria sank to this could not have phrased it more precisely. And now, my little chipmunk.
Really?
But, O king, what of your man, Trollis? Could you not send him away that we might have a bit of privacy? Oh no, most indubitably not. He is my bodyguard and most trusted bosom companion. He is never out of my sight, nor I of his. Isn't that right, good Trollis?
Never, Majesty.
As you wish, O wisest of owls. But what's this I've uncovered? A dagger of some sort and ruby studded, but so small. I keep it for lesser ceremonial occasions. You are too modest, chosen one. What the devil? Give that back to me, girl, now. Why, surely you do not fear such a toy, a mere plaything. Not you, who are the elect of gods, the handiwork of heaven. Why, you see, why no, my child, I merely feared that you would take your own life rather than compromise your far-famed virtue. Still, I would prefer it back in its sheath. Why, then, you shall have it, O blessed of Tarim. No, in the name of Erlik and Ishtar! And I'll sheathe it where I will do the most good. Majesty, no! You've slain him. The god of all Padishah is dead! Surely the gods will strike you dead for this foul blasphemy. It doesn't look good. It doesn't look to me as if the gods give a good damn about the miserable pig's life. Now, why don't you just show me a way out of this many-splintered hellhole, and then we'll... no, I don't guess we will at that. Murderous! Regicide! When I get finished, what's left of you will be turned over to the palace torturers. Do you hear me, wanton? I hear you, albino. Luckily, this lone guard didn't, for he was dozing outside the royal boudoir. Bells of hell, put away that sword, woman, before you... Dog, I was handling a blade when I was knee-high to your hauberk. Ah! While I have been bred to nothing but the sword since I was born, by Erlik, your harlot's head will hang high from the palace gate come morning. Trollis, listen to me. Gannith treated you like horse dung left on the stable floor. Why now seek to avenge him? It's myself I'll avenge. Myself and the easy life you've cost me. Avenge him? Why, I cared not a whit for that overstuffed royal sausage. Who am I? What is it, Trollis, without... What is Trollis without the king to guard and fret over? Just another strong back and a broad sword. One among hundreds I've embattled here, Kanya. I've youth now, but I'll grow old, and my sword hand will lose its skill. And then I'll be nothing. A penniless, pensionless, toothless beggar. And all because of you. Yeah! Then I'll spare you the curse of a long life, Trollis. And then you can tell the shades in hell whether you made the right choice or the wrong. Then silence reigned again, unopposed in a palace where monarch and minions lie dead. It was a simple thing enough for Red Sonja to find her armor and don it once more, then pass unchallenged from both palace and city. Already now the memories fade in Sonja's mind, for what's past is past. Though it be a moment, or an age agone, and the westward ride will be long and dangerous, and a night that has only just begun. Few men and fewer women ride this nearly pathless trail through the thickest part of the forest called Darkwood. But Red Sonja, late for Kanya, is not like other women in the so-called Hyborian Age. And so, making straight through the deep-shadowed grove before her, she sees it leering out at her. Stan Lee presents Red Sonja, She-Devil with a Sword. Roy Thomas, writer-editor, and Dick Giordano, artist. Michelle Wolfman, colors, and Kathy Ann Thomas, letterer. The Temple of Abomination, freely adapted from the short story by Robert E. Howard, creator of Red Sonja. She's seen other stone buildings in this storied part of Nemedia. Castle Vicentius, for instance, and another where a werewolf stalked and slew his prey. Yet as she passes into the cold stone structure, she knows instinctively that this forgotten shrine is different. There's an air of age about it, as of incredible antiquity, a lack of human habitation, since the day when man first ventured into this black forest of legend. At last she comes to what seems the innermost chamber, to be repelled by the loathsome, inhuman carvings which fill every dust-thick nook and cranny. She does not know she's being observed, till something suddenly leaps and capers at her. Shades of Erlik! Sonja does well to swear by the darkest, oldest gods of her native Hyrkania, since only in such fabled times can such a creature have existed, for even as she falls, drawing her dagger in a single smooth motion, she sees the horns upon its dusky, thick, furred head. The abhorrent sight makes her drive her blade home all the harder. Even as she does, she is aware that his legs are furred as well, and not shaped like a man's. And she hears his mitra hooves pound the smooth flagstones in the agony of death. In an open place, she would stop to examine the strange apparition, half man, half goat. But beholding the doorway through which he must have come, she moves towards it, sword in hand. If there be more such within, they'll not catch her unawares. Inside is a dark, circular chamber, and more statues. No, two of them alike. No one of them human in aspect, like the gods of the Hyborians who rule Nemedia. Still musing thus, she steps onto the five-pointed star at chamber's center, only to have it abruptly fall away in dread silence under her feet. In that moment, she would plunge into unseen abysses beneath. But first, the swiftness of her thought and hands. Only her gloves prevent her hands from being sliced mercilessly as she heaves up and out of the gaping blackness. She never lets go of her sword as she scrambles from the trap. For when the time does come, she means to carry it into hell with her. Breathing more easily now, she stares down, only to have her gaze swiftly swallowed in darkness, and a foul, indefinable stench drift up from far, far below. That stench she knows was never born on the earth she knows, on either side of the sea of Valiant. A groan. Then with a start she hears, a groan, but a human one at least. There, circled in light from an opening, high above hangs a man, sagging on chains which hold him half erect. At first, Sonya thinks him dead, for he seems not to move. And from the grisly mutation she detects, even at a distance, she feels it was better so. But then, the head lifts slightly, and a low moan sighs through pulped lips. Water! In Mitra's name! Here, old man, the god's blessing on you. Has the torment ended? Am I in paradise at last? That I see a human form again? For I am still galled by these heavy chains. But no, it is not paradise. Well, I don't know who you are, Greybeard, but you're human at least. So I'll not leave you dangling there at the mercy of hellspawn whores. What fiends used you so? Vermin who did not die when it was the appointed time for their kind. I was a priest of Mitra. And thus they hated me, left me to die slowly. Oh God, that my beliefs did not forbid taking my own fast-ebbing life! Looking deep into his eyes, Sonya knows what she must do, and her hand stabs swiftly downward. There is gratitude in the dying man's eyes, gratitude and a last waking prayer, that his God will not be angry when he greets him in misty realms. Of a sudden and not far off, there comes an eerie sound of pipes, a haunting song, aye, and haunted too. A moment later, there is a sound behind her, and she turns like a she-wolf at bay as an unhuman horde bursts into the chamber. Mitra! And still the pipes play on. She sees the demon piper now as she cuts a deadly swath through the onrushing mass, striking now with her bloody dagger, now with her equally lethal sword. For she sees an opening in the loathsome press, a second only, and she is through it like a springing leopard. Now, you music maker from hell, if I must die in this temple of abominations, at least I'll go down in silence. Come, you devil spawn, let's, by Tarim! She sees it all in an instant. The demi-men are all motionless now, as much as any carven statue. All that is, save the horn and bearded piper behind her, who has found there are other weapons besides his demon pipes. She-cur! For 1,000 years and more, my brethren have danced neath the moon, slaves to my pipes. Now you have shattered them for all time. Aye, monster, and I'll do the same to you, unless you let me depart in peace. Never! You slew my brethren and their plaything priest. For that you must pay, ere we could feed him to the slithering things in the pit. Oh, I'll pay all right. Pay you back slice by slice for the wounds suffered by that holy man, for I see that man-goats may also bleed. Then when your strength has ebbed a bit, a single stroke will disarm you, and give slither things, whatever they may be, the meal they darkly crave. The creature falls backward with a wild cry, a cry which rings up ever more faintly from untold deaths, then ceases abruptly. And from far below, there rise sounds as of a grisly feast. After burying the priest, Red Sonya rides her way, knowing that night will find her far from that temple of terror. And grateful she'd not be able to find her way back if she tried. Finn. Okay, and that's going to be the end of Red Sonja for now. This is a lot of books. There's 7 of them here, minus the intro. Some of you may have rather wished that I didn't read the intro, but I felt it was only right. And it also gave us some good backstory for what's happening here and what was going on in the life of the people making this stuff, which is always important, I think. And we'll definitely continue with more Red Sonja if you guys want. I mean, I rather like this. I've really gotten into it, as you've noticed. So hopefully we'll continue. And at any rate, this will be the Grim Lord, and I'm out with Grimm's Comics Corner and Red Sonja.